Good afternoon, friends, and thank you again for joining us on WISR 680 AM. We're getting ready for tomorrow's primary election, Tuesday, June the 2nd, and we wanted to get a perspective from what's happening all across the state, and so we turned to one of the experts. He's Terry Madonna. He is the director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College, also oversees the Franklin and Marshall College poll, and is a professor of public affairs. Terry, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So this is going, Terry, to feel like an election unlike any other we've had in recent memory with the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Let's start with what has been a topic of conversation, even at a national level, and that's the mail-in ballots here in Butler County. County officials saying 25,000 applications they've filled out. What role do you think mail-in ballots will play in this election?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt they're going to play a huge role. This is the first time. Now, Pennsylvania historically has had absentee ballots. You had to have a reason for it that's in the election code. You know, you need, if you're ill, if you're traveling, if the work assignment, you know, takes you somewhere else, you could do an absentee. But for the first time in the history of the state, anyone can file for a mail-in ballot and vote by, you know, sending it back to the appropriate place in the courthouse. Secondly, some counties have places where you can literally physically drop the ballot off in a mailbox. Not all do. And the last number I saw, and we don't have the final numbers from the Department of State, you had to get the ballot by May 26th. So you can't get one now. You have to show up at the polls if you want to vote. But it was 1.6 million. Out in Philadelphia, they think that more people will actually vote by mail-in than show up at the polls. And so this is going to have a huge effect. Now, more Democrats apply than Republicans. That doesn't mean that more Democrats are voting overall. It just means that in the densely populated areas, in urban areas and the suburbs where the Democrats tend to predominate, there's just more applicants from those regions than from the rural parts of the state. What I call the rural and small town parts of the state, where you know folks are much more likely to vote in person because the COVID-19 cases are not nearly as high as they are in the densely populated urban areas. The other point I would make, as I made, is don't expect to know the results on the evening of June 2nd. This is going to take days to get all these counted, and we may not know the winner of primaries in either party for some experts have said it could be a couple of days.
And this is the first time mail-in ballots have been used. So essentially you're saying election departments aren't just going to be used to processing this many elections ballots prior to election day.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, some precincts are going to be, are going to be absolutely overwhelmed by it. And there'll be glitches in it. There'll be ballots that won't end up in the right place. And here's something else that if you have a mail-in ballot, you have to think about. They must be in to the county offices by 8 p.m. on next Tuesday on June 2nd. If they get later than that, they're not going to be counted. There was a case before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruled no, there would be no extension, meaning you could be postmarked before June 2nd, let's say, but it doesn't arrive until June 3rd or June 4th in the appropriate county offices. The fact of the matter is that the Supreme Court said no, 8 o'clock, June 2nd, that's it. So there are people who are going to use a mail-in ballot, but they're not going to be counted if they don't get their on time, and trust me, there'll be more than a few that are not likely to get there on time.
Is there a side of any party you think that, because we're talking about primaries here, so not necessarily Democrat and Republicans, but maybe inside those parties that it's going to favor? Is it going to favor a more progressive Democratic candidate, or is it going to favor a more conservative Republican candidate? Is there any type of information available on that?
Yeah, I've not seen any. Here's the way. The campaigning, traditional campaigning, is done.
Mm-hmm.
It's done in the sense that forget the street corner rallies, forget the kinds of events that typically would happen door to door. How many state lawmakers, state legislative candidates go out and knock on doors? How many of them hold what I call street corner rallies? How many go to Sertoma clubs, Rotary clubs, you know, the usual events that people are likely to go to, you know, as part of a campaign? That's not at all taking place. It's all done virtually, and you're not reaching people, you're not reaching people in the same way, and I would argue not even to the same degree. I'm not suggesting that the campaigns aren't doing everything they can to communicate virtually, get lists of people who are likely to vote, send in, you know, contact those folks by email or by in one fashion or another. And of course, Zoom has now emerged as a big way to communicate. So I'm not ruling any of that out, but campaigning is so different. I think it more often than not will help incumbents right now. It will help incumbents because they will have name recognition. They will be better. Now, you know, unless there's a scandal or something going on, that's a little unusual.
And naturally, incumbents, right, they're just tough to beat anyways in a primary. And with the way campaigns are right now, you're saying this is basically going to be a really tall task for a challenger to come away with a win.
I think there has to be some flaw, some problem with an incumbent that's pretty well known. Some element of unpopularity, that's going to be essential. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Are there any particular? And we're talking with Terry Madonna. He is a professor of public affairs at Franklin and Marshall College, and also the director for the Center of Politics and Public Affairs. Terry, is there any particular race across Pennsylvania that interests you, even at the state house level, or perhaps the state senate level, or even congressional races for that matter?
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the other way to think about this. As you look at the ballot in both parties, what impresses me is the fact that there are so many people, incumbents, who are running unchallenged. If you take a look at the 18 congressional districts, 9 Republicans, 9 Democrats make up the composition of those districts. A good many of them are running unopposed. I'm actually impressed with the number of offices at all levels where there's no opponent. And think about this: we got a primary going on, and we're not in this cycle electing a governor. We're not electing a United States senator. We are electing the 3 so-called row offices, state treasurer, auditor general, and attorney general. And 2 incumbents, the state treasurer, Joe Torsello, who's a Democrat, and Josh Shapiro, a Democrat attorney general, both of them are seeking a second term. They have no Democratic opponent. Think about that for a minute. No Democratic opponent. On the Auditor General side, Eugene DePasquale, who's the current Auditor General, has termed out, in a sense. He's in his second term and can't seek re-election. So there's a plethora of Democrats running to replace him in the Democratic primary. But there's virtually no news about them, mainly because they don't have the money to do extensive advertising. And again, you can't do the traditional ways of campaigning. And I think that anything else sheds the most important aspect, the most important element in trying to understand the election.
Well, even on the Republican side for 2 of those races you mentioned, attorney general and treasurer, from my understanding, there is only 1 candidate on the Republican side, so there's not even a party or a primary opposition for somebody trying to get into that seat, trying to change the party.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, that's the point I've been making in general, is the lack of competition that's going on. It's basically pretty difficult to defeat an incumbent. You need again some fundamental reason that resonates with voters. And now you just have the trouble of communicating. And again, typically, if you have a governor or U.S. senator, statewide, that attracts a good bit of attention. But there's nothing statewide. These 3 row offices treasurer, auditor general, and attorney general just are not elections that attract, you know, the kind of attention that you might expect that they would. And that's been a significant factor in this.
And then, of course, and we're talking with Terry Madonna, Franklin and Marshall College. Wanted to touch a little bit on the presidential election. Pennsylvania garnered a whole lot of attention in 2016 as a swing state that eventually broke to Donald Trump. There's candidates on the ballot for the presidential election, but we know Joe Biden on the Democratic side. We know Donald Trump on the Republican side. Is there anything you're looking at in the primary that could give you an indication of what things will shape up like in the fall?
Not in the primary. Here's what to think about, though. Joe Biden is, as the current expression is, presumptive nominee. I love that expression. But Bernie Sanders is still on the Pennsylvania ballot, as is another Democrat. So there are three Democrats running to win the Pennsylvania primary, and Bernie Sanders is technically not out of the contest. He's not out of the race. He suspended his campaign. He didn't remove himself. He didn't get out of the race. He suspended it because what he wants to do is to be able to go to the Democratic convention and have an impact on the platform. I'm not sure he doesn't think that if something happens to Joe Biden, he'd like to be the nominee as well. We know that he would. And the same on the Republican side. There are two other candidates that are on the ballot. One is as well. And you know, Trump's going to win the primary. I don't think there's anything that I'm looking at there, but you're on to something, and here's what it is. There are four critical states right now, battleground states, that most political analysts are watching: Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Florida. Now, there are other contests around the country that are important, but those four battleground states delivered the nomination to Donald J. Trump in 2016. Right now, in those four states, Joe Biden has a lead. The lead isn't huge. In Pennsylvania, however, the lead in the Real Clear Politics average is 6.5 for Biden. So he has a bigger lead in Pennsylvania than he does in the other three battleground states. But Pennsylvania is going to be at the center, along with Florida, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Florida has 29 electoral votes. Pennsylvania has 20. So those two states right there have 49 electoral votes. It's a huge proportion. I might add that we're going to watch Arizona and we're going to watch North Carolina. As we speak right now, Trump has a narrow lead in North Carolina, but he's not winning Arizona. But again, much of this can still change. We still have months to go before November 3rd. We don't know what will a judgment of the voters finally will be on how the president's handled coronavirus. We don't know the status of the economy. All that's really important, and we have to, you know, time ourselves to see what breaks and what develops.
I'm sure, and we're talking with Terry Madonna, Franklin and Marshall College, obviously known for their polls, and I'm sure, Terry, you could sit here and talk 2 hours about the role polls play in terms of politics and things like that. What I go back to, and, you know, personal opinion, and then I'll get into a question, but it seemed like a lot of the polls, especially for the Democratic primary this year, held up over the long run. Joe Biden was the early front runner, and there was some fluctuation at the early parts of this, but is it that big of a surprise that Joe Biden turned out to be the nominee? Because the polling, at least for a long time, showed that he was winning the primary.
Yeah, that's right. No, it didn't surprise me. I remember that Joe Biden was literally running as a partner of a guy named Barack Obama. And for most of the campaign, it was about Obama and Biden and what they did during the 8 years of Obama's presidency. There's no doubt about that. That's an important component of it. And he was the best known of the candidates as well. A little more centrist than progressive Democrats would like, but he's been moving to the left steadily over the last several months on a whole variety of positions, and it didn't surprise me at all that he has the lead. And it, by the way, in Pennsylvania, I think he has led in virtually every poll. Maybe one didn't have him ahead, but he's led the president in poll after poll after poll after poll in our state. Remember, Joe Biden was born in Scranton. He lived there until he was 10. When he moved, his dad had some financial trouble, so he moved to Wilmington, where he got involved in the car business, automobile business. Biden spent 36 years in the Senate representing the neighboring state of Delaware. And down in the southeastern part of the state, the Philadelphia television media market, the fourth largest in the country, covered him extensively because Delaware doesn't have commercial television. So Joe Biden got huge coverage in the southeastern part of our state, in the most populous region of the state, and he spent during his 36 years and also his 8 years as VP traveling around Pennsylvania supporting Democratic candidates, but also doing programs and speeches. So he starts out in our state much better known than any of the other Democratic candidates, and he led in our state as well throughout. Now, we've moved our primary from April to June because of COVID-19, and my sense is he would have won the primary even earlier, but the nomination was pretty well wrapped up, as you accurately point out.
As we look toward the fall, I think there's always a little bit of pushback after the election in 2016 where, you know, polls showed Hillary Clinton with the lead. Granted, it felt like it was in between the margin of error in a lot of the polling, but nonetheless, you know, the president has emphasized that polls were wrong in 2016. What's your interpretation of how to view polls here as we get ready for the 2020 general election?
Yeah. Well, if we take a look at the national polls, the national polls were about 3 or 4 points showing Hillary Clinton ahead. She won by 2.1 percentage points, so they were within what we call the margin of error. It's the state polls that had the problem. And the Center for Opinion Research that does FNM, which does the poll for my center, for me, in effect, what happened is important. We did not do any interviewing. We did our poll before 10 days before the election, 10 days before. And what we found out in exit polls in one that was done in our state by opinion research, as well as other states, a huge percentage of voters made up their mind or changed their mind within the last 10 days. So the state polls were much more than the national polls, and one reason might be when they were actually doing the interviewing. So if you do them close to the election, you were more likely to be closer. If you did like we did, you were 10 days out. You had too many people who made up their mind or changed their mind in the last 10 days, and an overwhelming proportion of those who made up their mind or changed their mind in the last 10 days went for Trump. But there were also some other technical problems with the polls that I don't need to get into. But and there were voters, and I traveled around the state doing a lot of speeches and events, and this is not scientific. This is more impressionistic. I think there were a lot of voters who were going to vote for Trump but wouldn't tell people. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You're the radio guy. You know that. I don't know if you found that to be true or not.
Well, at least in this county, in Butler County locally, this was, I went for Donald Trump in the primary and was heavy Donald Trump in the general election. So I think at least here locally, there was broad support for the president. So I don't know necessarily if that was the case here, but I don't disagree with your opinion overall.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm a little more confident that, you know, the lessons learned from what happened in 2016 will be applied. Here's the other thing that I would tell the listeners. I'm a big believer in the average of the polls, not a single poll, which can have a problem. Average of the polls. So you can get on Nate Silver's 538 blog, or I use Real Clear Politics, either one, and use the average of the polls. The other thing you have to look at is when the polls were done. When did they complete the interviews? So polls done 2 or 3 weeks ago would have shown Trump's job performance a bit higher. It would have shown his handling the coronavirus much higher. That's now dropped about 10 points from what it was at the high point. He was over 50% President Trump for handling coronavirus situation. His overall job performance has varied only by 2 or 3 points mm-hmm. because of strong Republican support for him. And what's ironic is, look at the economy. Many economists think we're actually not in a recession but a depression, yet he's over 50% positive for handling the economy. on the Real Clear Politics average. That's the way it was yesterday. I didn't look today yet.
Well, to your point, too, you know, tracking his approval ratings, and, you know, I go off the 538 website, too, it fluctuates, like you said, 2%. For the most part, his approval ratings over the last 3 to 4 years have been right around 43%, and the disapproval right around 50%. It doesn't change no matter what happens.
That's because of the heavy polarization. 90% of Republicans give him a positive job performance, and Democrats are in the single digits. The big change has occurred with independent voters. But again, as you point out, I think his high point was 47% positive. About last week, at one point, Trump was back to 46% positive, 46% on the Real Clear Politics average. So you're exactly right. The polarization is so intense and so extreme that Democrats won't give him credit for anything. And I'm exaggerating, obviously. And Republicans don't see him doing anything wrong, even if he does something wrong. You know what I mean? And that polarization is very, very important.
Well, he's Terry Madonna of Franklin and Marshall College. Terry, appreciate you taking the time and chatting.
My pleasure. Anytime. Have a great day.
You too. And we'll be back with more right after this.